Ready? All right, Parsky states, eh? The wording seems off. It starts off like this. He states, "Lemochama aloydecho," when you go out to war against your enemies, "Unzano Hashem lokecha biyadecha v'shelisa shivyo," and Hashem, your God, puts them in your hands, and you take captives. So here's the wording over here. Number one, seitze is off. When you go out, that's number one. It shouldn't be go out. It should be lihilachem. And then also it should take care of lamelchama. Go out to war, to a war. It should be lihilachem. When you go to wage war against your enemies. So the proper Hebrew phrase should have been, I guess you could say, kitilachem aloivecha. When you wage war against your enemies. So what's up with those words? And also, what's unesan noah? That Hashem is going to put them inside your hands. What's the big deal about that, and why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to put them in? So, little crazy promise. The promise goes like this. The promise was given over to Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Sheva Menashe. Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Sheva Menashe. Those guys were promised the following. That whenever they went, that they were promised that wherever they went, when they went to Eretz Yisrael, when they went to Eretz Canaan to go fight against the Goyim that were there, they were promised not a single one of you was going to die. Reuven, Menashe, and Gad were going to be able to fight against everybody in Eretz Canaan and be able to return to tell the story to their kids and everybody else. Now that's crazy. How can you guarantee life? How can you guarantee that someone's going to be there? I realize it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he can do that. But we're talking over 40,000 people that went out to fight from Menashe, from Reuven, and from Gad. Some say it's 40,000 each. You have that many people, you're going to guarantee that every single person is going to come back to go see the land outside 14 years later. 14 years later. How is that possible? But the pshat is, it must be possible. Nobody died during the war of Amalek. Nobody died in the war against Sichon. And no Jew died during the war against Og. Nobody died during those three wars. And then against the 31 kings, nobody was supposed to have died. How's that shaykh? How is it possible that the Jews didn't lose anybody?
What do you mean no one died during
Amalek? Not one person died when they fought Amalek. Yachalosh, Yoshua. Even a Malakim didn't die in that war. Nobody died.
By Moshe, when his hands were up.
Right, when his hands were up, they were winning the war. When his hands went down, they were losing the war. It doesn't mean people were dying. It's a crazy little thing, but the Gemara says it was not a normal physical war. It was more of a spiritual war. It's just a very strange thing. What does it mean in the end? Well, how does that work? So the idea is like this. Goyim work based on kochos in the sky. Meaning they base themselves on kochos atuma and strengths of tuma that are out there in the sky. For example, let's just say there are planets out there. Each one of them gives their strength over to a certain goy. And there's malachim that are also in charge. 70 angels for the 70 goyim out there. I found this week that there's a merkava, just like there's a maisa merkava for kedusha, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And on the maisa merkava, there's adam and kruvim and a shor and an eagle and a nesher. And instead of that, I'm sorry, shore and kruvim go together. And then Aryeh, a lion. Maisa Merkava is the chariot of God. So too, there's a chariot of Tuma. And in that chariot of Tuma, that Maisa Merkava of Tuma, there's crazy things up there. There's a Nachash, there's a shore, a chamor, and then there's another picture of another, of an evil person. That's up there on top of that Merkava Atuma. They have their own kohos that bring down strength to those people. Now, we also have something very similar, but we go straight to a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have kohos HaKadusha that are able to give us koach within this world. They're able to add on to our Kedusha, to add on to the Kedusha that we have, and by doing such things, we can affect other worlds, the worlds can affect us, everything can happen because we're able to bring Kedusha back to Shemayim, and Shemayim is able to bring that Kedusha back down to us, and everything happens very, very well. However, when we fight the Goyim, the way that we end up fighting the Goyim is HaKadosh Baruch Hu fights for us, because we have a direct connection with God, and the Goyim have their Malachim, the evil Malachim, the Malachim Amashchis, of those 70 Malachim that are in charge of them, that go up and start their fight, as if there's a fight in Shemayim. So if the Jews want to fight the Goyim, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu first does is he takes that Goyish Malach, and if we deserve it, he takes the Goyish Malach and he throws him down to the ground. If we don't deserve it, Hashem allows that Goyish Malach to keep moving around. Now when that Goyish Malach gets taken down, that means that all the strength of that nation is now tied up, almost. It's like they can't use it. There's nothing there. So they're totally tied up, they're totally destroyed, and they can't do anything about it. There's nothing for them, there's nothing that affects them. And the reason why is simply put, because their malach that's giving them all their strength is tied up and can't do anything. So the Goyim themselves can't do anything. So what happened when they went out to these wars is that they went out against Amalek, against Sichon, against Og, against the 31 kings in Eretz Canaan. And what they did is they went out to them, and these guys were sitting in the street just like that. And they couldn't move. And the Jews just went up to them and stabbed them. Just like that. Because there was nothing else they needed to do. That's unsano Hashem Elokecha b'yadecha. God put them in your hands. All you have to do is go up to them and knock them over and they're dead. And that's it. Because they have no strength. All the strength is in their malachim, but their malachim were just taken down. So it was so easy for the Jews to be able to go out and do that. When that happens, now we can understand. Ki seitzei la melchama. It's really like a sleeping nefesh that's all out there for them. Ki seitzei la melchama, not lihilachem, to wage war. You're not going to wage war. When you go out to the place of war, you're going to see nisano Hashem Elokecha b'yadecha, that God put them all in your hands. And thus, Shavisa Shivio, you'll be able to come up with captives and everything like that, because you're not going to kill everyone out there. You'll be able to capture some person, some people, and be able to take it back with you. That's the idea.
None of this applies to the modern wars of Israel.
No, definitely not. Not definitely not. But, I mean, it could happen if there ever was a case of unsano Hashem Elokecha b'yadecha, where it's definitely obvious that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is putting everybody in your hands, and you don't have to worry about anything.
But the six-day war isn't as obvious as what you're talking about.
Definitely not. We don't have Nisim Gluyim anymore. Now, regarding Yifas Toar, those beautiful women that you see in the middle of war, it's definitely an interesting concept. I mean, I don't think there's a more interesting concept in the entire Torah. First of all, we're going to mention a couple things, a couple questions in the beginning. Yifas is the same Lashon as Pesi, the same exact letters as Pesi. Pesi means stupid. That the Panach Raza says, you're an idiot for getting involved with Yifas Toar. You're an idiot for getting involved with it. You shouldn't have anything to do with it whatsoever. David HaMelech was yelled at by Hushia Arki. Hushia Arki was one of the Nevi'im at the time. Yelled at by Hushia Arki for taking Yifas Toar. He wasn't yelled at for Bathsheba. Wasn't yelled at for Avigail or anything else that might have happened by him, but he was yelled at for the Yifas Toar. What is the big deal? The Yifas Toar is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah written in the Torah. Why was David HaMelech yelled at, and what's the idea behind the pesi behind it? And we say that a Ben Sor Remora comes from that. Why in the world does a Ben Sor Remora come from all this? That's number one. Number two, only tzaddikim. You couldn't have any chatoyim to go out to war. You have to be a major tzaddik to be able to go out to war and to fight against these enemies. So I don't understand. What is up with these tzaddikim that all of a sudden they see a beautiful woman and they go and they take them? What's up with that? What in the world happened with these women that he's grabbing these women like that? That's number two. Number three, Eshes Yifas Toar means she's married. Like an Eshes Ish. That means she's married to someone. You can take someone who's married and we're not worried. The Chizkuni says that we're not afraid that maybe you'll take that Eshes Ish is going to go back to her original husband. We're not worried about that whatsoever. That really, an Eshes Ish, but don't worry about it. I'm sure she'll be okay with you. And she'll stay with you. Even though she'll see her husband later on, she's not going to go back to her husband. That's a little weird also, yeah.
Doesn't Eshet, with the top after it, mean that she's the wife of a Yifas Torah?
There's a Chassam Sofer that asked that question. I don't think I'm going to go into this here, but he says that, yes, she's so disgusting, she's married to another woman, and yet you're still willing to take her. Yeah, it's a Chassam Sofer that thinks exactly, actually.
Yifat is feminine also.
Yeah, it goes into the entire thing, but a very, very good call. Number four is, what's with the whole process of her fingernails and her hair, we specifically mention, and then we say that she's got to cry for her father and her mother for 30 days. What, she has to cry? What if she doesn't cry? She's not a crier. She's more of a, you know, she's a tomboy. Like, is that allowed? Like, what if she doesn't cry? If she doesn't want to sit there crying for her father and mother, let's say she decides, I want to come into Bnei Yisrael, I want to join Bnei Yisrael right now. Is that allowed? Why do we make her sit there for 30 days? What's with the whole process that we make her wait? So the Or HaChaim explains. Yes, we have tzaddikim out there. These tzaddikim are like Yehuda. Now, I think we all understand that Yehuda and Tamar was not a simple thing. That Yehuda seeing Tamar on the streets and seeing her as a zonah was not just a simple thing of, oh, Yehuda saw a prostitute, so he decided, okay, I'm going to turn to the road and be able to take this prostitute and take her for myself. Obviously, that's not Pashup Shah. Yehuda could not have just done something like that, because everything we know about Yehuda goes against that type of an idea. Now, I'm not saying that it never could be. Maybe it could be that Yehuda did such a thing. It just seems a little strange that all those things happen. So we have all our answers for Yehuda. But the basic answer is a Medrash, and it's also Gemara and Sota and Daf Yud Gimel. That the idea is that Yehuda, when he saw Tamar, was grabbed by a taiva that he's never had before. A malach gave him a taiva like he's never had for a woman before. And he saw her and he said, I don't get it. What am I seeing over here? Why is she so beautiful? She's wearing ugly clothing, black clothing, and Tamar was filled completely with black clothing, only showing her eyes. What kind of a taiva could you possibly have for that type of a woman? Just seeing her eyes? What was there? You're looking at a lump of coal. And you had a taiva for her? How do you have that taiva? Yet still he felt it. He knew it was coming straight from Shemayim. Now, nobody here can make this. Nobody here can make this decision. But if you're a tzaddik, and you're going out to war because you have absolutely no chatayim, and all of a sudden in the middle of the war, you see a woman who's captured. Now remember, they're going through a lot of pain and tribulation. Now Rashi does say that they dress themselves up because they want people to take them. However, still, there's a lot of smoke going on. There's a lot of killing. She probably has blood all over her. She's got dirt everywhere. You know, she's not going to look the best that she's ever looked before in her life. She's not going to look the best she's ever looked. As much as she's going to dress herself up, she's still going to look pretty ugly. And plus, can you imagine what her husband's thinking? Like, what are you dressing up for? Nothing, honey. I'm fine. Don't worry about it. She seems a little, you know, like there's something out there where she's dressing up, but we know that she's not going to look the same way. What are you seeing over here? Why is it Tzadik even looking? The pshat is that a Kaddish Baruch Hu makes sure this Tzadik knows that the only reason why I'm seeing her must be for a reason. There must be something that I'm supposed to see in this situation. What is it? I don't know right now. I have no idea. But there's a reason why a Kaddish Baruch Hu is making me see this woman at this point, and it must be because a Kaddish Baruch Hu wants me to take her as a wife. Similar to Yehuda and Tamar.
Say the same thing about, like, when you hear someone speaking about you or something. 100%
with the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov says whenever you hear something, you always have to attribute it. There's a reason why a Kaddish Baruch Hu put it in front of your face, and there is a case of David HaMelech with the Yifas Toar. The Medrash says that David HaMelech met the Yifas Toar as he was walking away from the war and realized that if a Kaddish Baruch Hu wanted him to meet up with his Yifas Toar, it must be for a reason. So he took her as a Yifas Toar. Obviously, that didn't work out in the best way possible. That's the reason why it's Yifas Toar and not Yifas Mara. Yifas Toar means she's got an okay look. You know, she's like, she looks okay. She's got a good appearance. Yifas Mara means she's beautiful. Yifas Toar just means, okay, she's got like nice skin or something. But she's not a beautiful girl. She's not something that would attract yourself to her. That's the difference between Yifas Toar and Yifas Mara, because this woman is not necessarily beautiful. She's just the Yifas Toar. And there's a little bit more to it as well. The Dubno Magid says that the word that's used for it is the word chashak, the chashak davar. There's a difference between the word cheshek and chefetz. Cheshek, says the Dubno Magid, is used for a pure desire spiritually. Chefetz is a desire physically. Later on it says, im lo chafatz davar. If you have no physical desire for her, get rid of her. After you see that she's really ugly and you have no physical desire for her anymore, get rid of her. She must not be a real person. That's the idea of being a chefetz. But cheshek is in the beginning. If you have a spiritual desire for her, says the Orach Chaim, it's a holy neshama. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to take that holy neshama and bring it into Klal Yisrael. And the only way for it to happen is through this war. And the entire idea behind this war, the entire idea of the Yifas Toar is to grab that holy neshama and bring it into Klal Yisrael. How will you know it's a holy neshama? How will you know if you have no sins and you can go to war? That's got to be a crazy person who's going to go to war. Somebody who goes to war and mamish feels he has absolutely no sins, that person can really figure out who's Yifas Toar and who's not Yifas Toar, who's ready to bring into Klal Yisrael, who's not ready to bring into Klal Yisrael. That's the idea behind it. The Torah matured, but it said, wait a second, you might have made a mistake. So wait 30 days, you got to wait a little bit and see. Im lo chafatzba, then you have to go ahead and get rid of her. Now, Rav Wolfson adds on a little bit to this, and we're going to add it on. It's an unbelievable thing. There's such a thing called an or a makif. Oramakiv means you are surrounded by a crazy light, a crazy kedusha, and that kedusha does not allow anything to come anywhere near you. Now there are certain mitzvos that do that for you, like a talis. Putting on a talis and wearing the talis and covering up your head and doing stuff like that places an oramakiv around you that will protect you from not only mazikin and kochos hashedim and whatever and kochos hatuma and everything, but it'll protect you from bad things from what you're seeing or whatever like that. Tefillin also does that. Mezuzah does that. Shabbos and sukkah. Those are the ones that are supposed to cause an or makif to go around you and to surround you so that you're protected at all times. Now, that protection was the same protection that Kaddish Baruch Hu gave to Adam Rishon. The Kosnos Or. There are two times where Adam Rishon and Chava get clothing. One is Kosnos Or with an ayin. The other one is Kosnos Or with an aleph. The Kosnos Or with an aleph means an or makif, a light that surrounded them. Not only the physical clothing that they had, but a Kosnos Or means that they had a light surrounding them that protected them from any chatoim that they might have done. Any chatoim that they had after the whole chait with the Adam Rishon and the Eitz Hadas, he gave them Kosnos Or to protect them from that from those problems. Rabbi Yitzchak Chiyus, it might be related to the Maratz Chiyus in the back of the Gemara with Svir Shchayus, I'm not so sure. He said about his father that his father's Rebbe came to his father in a dream. And when he appeared to his father in a dream, he was glowing. He had a glow all over his body, except for his feet, which were bare feet and they weren't glowing at all. And he asked Rabbi Yitzchak Chayis, his father, asked his Rebbe, what's going on? What happened to your feet? Why aren't your feet glowing? And he said, because I've done certain mitzvos, but I never ran after tzedakah. Meaning, when people were giving money for the poor and I was collecting for the poor, I sent other people to go instead of me. I didn't run myself. Had I run myself, then with my own feet, then my feet would have gotten the Or Makif as well. It's supposed to be some type of connection to what you're supposed to have in Olam Haba and Gan Eden. You're supposed to have this Or Makif that's surrounding you, that's taking care of you at all times, that should surround you at all times with Kedusha. Women have this as well, with Big Day Tznius. If they wear Tznius clothing, they're able to have this Or Makif that goes around them. I think that's one of the biggest Kedushim I've ever heard before in my life. But by wearing Big Day Tznius, by covering themselves up, and by not allowing their skin to show, they get this Or Makif that surrounds them, that allows them to have an ultimate Kedusha, in which they're able to have a crazy amount of Kedusha, and they can be closer to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. We need tefillin. We need a talus. We need other things to be able to get that Or Makif. The women don't need that. They just need to wear Tznius stick of clothing, and automatically they get that Or Makif that surrounds them, and everything's all good. Says Rav Wolfson. I'm sorry? Rav Wolfson. I didn't make it up myself. I wouldn't say it myself. Rav Wolfson himself says that. I think that's a massive, massive Kiddush, but he does say that. Now, this woman is trapped within the Chitzoni. She's trapped within Tuma. She's sitting in a land with all the Goyim, and it's a holy neshama inside. But it's trapped within the Klipos. It's trapped with a shell around her, full of Tuma and full of everything. She can't see anything at all. She can't really realize what she's missing. What we do is we take her, the Isira Simlas Shivya Me'alav. We take off that clothing, the Tame Dika clothing that's surrounding her and making her be Tame, and we give her the clothes of a Bas Yisrael. We give her Tznius Dika clothing, and we surround her with an Or Makif. And then we take off the two kokos atuma that she has on her. Hair and nails. Hair and nails are both parts, both things that are mentioned that you gotta cut your nails. You know, everybody knows you can't just leave them on the ground. Can't just leave them or forget about bacteria. Not only to leave them on the ground, you gotta make sure to either flush them or burn them. If a woman that's pregnant steps on them, she can miscarry from them. Crazy things going on with nails. Hair as well. Hair is supposed to be from your bad thoughts, from your hurim roim that you have in your head. It causes your hair to grow. Both hair and nails we have to take off from this woman. It's machlok. Because if you take them off, you make the hair, the nails grow longer. But according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that says that you take them off, then that opinion says you're taking away the kokos atuma. You're taking away the nails that are kokos atuma. You're taking away the hair that's kokos atuma. You're taking away all the tuma that she has, her hair, her nails, her clothing. You surround her with big day tznius. And then after that, immediately, it's not that we want her to cry or that we need her to cry. She'll automatically cry. Says the Medrash, Aviha is the Shechina. Ima is Klal Yisrael. She'll cry about the fact that I can't believe I've been missing out on this my entire life. I can't believe that I've never been around for this entire time. It'll take 30 days for her to sit there and realize I can't believe that I haven't been Zocha to be able to come into Klal Yisrael for so long, because her neshama is there already. It's a holy neshama already. And if after 30 days she doesn't cry for her father and her mother, she's not crying for the Shechina, she doesn't want to become Jewish, then you know it's wrong. Then you know it's off. Because if she had that holy of a neshama, and we surround her with the big day tznius, and yet she still didn't feel it, something's wrong. We did something wrong. We picked somebody who's wrong. And that's when we know that something's wrong. We send her back and we say, forget it, get out of here. We don't want you here. But if she does have the Or Makif around her, she should be able to realize everything. And that's the idea behind it. All based on her holy neshama that's on the inside. Look like you want to ask a question. You don't like it?
No.
No, because it's not shy.
It's the furthest from shot.
It's the furthest.
That's
the Pashup shot is definitely the Yetzirah. Definitely the Yetzirah. But I definitely think that there's more to it than just meets the eye. Because to just say that there's a Yetzirah involved is...
It's basically, you're at war...
Naive when you have tzaddikim.
Why? Well, two things. A, tzaddikim are still human beings.
Definitely
a,
true.
Okay, and B, you're at war, you're like adrenaline rushes.
Oh,
and,
very good.
And you
have to ask why Hashem would give you that Yetzirah.
Ramban points out also, you'll see among the captives. That means that you're not fighting at the time. I know there is, Rashi seems to say that it's during the actual war when you're fighting, but you're not allowed to have bia with a woman in the middle of the war. You can't have bia. The bia Rishona can happen sometime during the war, but you're not allowed to just stop fighting and have bia with this woman and just grab her into a corner and just say, like, okay, I'm going to be done with this and give into your Yetzirah. It's funny. It's only Varisa Bashevia, you'll see her among the captives later on when you're not fighting. There's no more adrenaline rush. You're done. It's like the game's all over. You're sitting there drinking a Gatorade, and just like all of a sudden, there's another adrenaline rush that's coming because the woman came near you, and you think that might be spiritual and that would be mutter? Why? That's already the question that's brought down.
What I'm saying is that you're away. You're not at home. You're not with your family. You're
definitely.
Not with your wife. You're out somewhere else. And you're
depressed.
What?
And you're depressed?
No. But and basically, the Torah is giving you a way to
release energy
without committing an avir.
What about according to the Ramban?
According to
Ramban, that's the Rambam says you can have the birishona during the war, but according to Ramban, that says you can't.
In the war.
You can have it 30 days later. So then what? You can only have it when you bring her home, and 30 days later, it's the first time you can be with her. Then what? You know what I'm saying? That's a little strange. Because for sure then, like, you're not doing anything. You're grabbing her and saying, okay, I'll get her in another, you know, 123 days.
Well, Ramban is saying you have to have time to mull over.
You need something to stay alive for, keep fighting for.
But you have a wife and kids at home. I definitely hear you. According to the Rambam, for sure. But according to the Ramban, it still does seem a little strange. And I think that's what this shot is based on. That according to the Ramban, and it's really, I shouldn't even say it's Ramban and Rambam. It's Machluk is Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish and Yerushalmi. So it's not like it's, you know, just Stama thing. It's a real Machlokis. What do we matter? Do we matter the Birishon or the Biashnia? That is a real Machlokis out there. All right, but let's go into something a little bit more esoteric. Because let's get a little bit more. Well, this is somewhat tied to Pshat. We're skipping the Ben Sora Mora for now. In the beginning of Sheni, Pasachov Beis, when a guy is a sin, a punishment of death, behumas, and he's killed, the Talisa also alates, and you hang him up on a tree. So the halacha is by somebody gets skila, it's machlokis, if it's the Rabbanan hold, it's only by a Megadeh, and somebody who's over to Avodah Zarah, and Rabbi Eliezer holds it's by anybody who gets skila, but you have to hang them up on a tree afterward. So the Pasach says, Lo Talin Nivlasu Ala Eitz, you're not allowed to leave his body on the tree, Kikavortik Berenu Bayoma, who you got to bury him that day. Kikil Zalohim Taloi, it's a curse of God when the guy is hung. And you won't be metami the land that God gave you as an achla. So what's going on over here? What is it? What's the deal with this mitzvah of lo talan? Why can't you leave the dead body up on the tree? So the idea is like this. It is mutter to use shadim to get things for you. It's a siman in Shulchan Aruch, Kufayin and Tess, and the Torah goes through it quite a bit. The Beis Yosef and the Bach have a big, big machlokas about this. But it is mutter to call up shadim to be able to find something that was lost in order to help you out getting something that you might not have gotten. You can call up shadim, mazik, and ruchos. You're allowed to call them up from the netherworld, whatever you want to call it, in order to help you out. However, they do forewarn you that if you do such a thing, if you do call up these demons, if you do call up all these things, then it's very possible that they'll affect you in bad ways. That they will trick you, that they'll laugh at you, and then they'll want to grab your body. And after your death, it's very, very important that person is buried in a certain place as soon as possible. Because if the Shadim have any connection with that body, they're going to take it for themselves and use it for their Kochos Atum or whatever it is. Now that's why the Sefer HaChassidim brings down, and the Talmud Hagen brings down, there's a Siva, there's a reason why we bury our dead, but we have a Shomer there all night long. We don't allow the dead body to be by itself, we don't allow to be in a morgue all night long. We need somebody to be there, a Jewish person to be there, and hopefully two guys to be there all night long so that the dead body isn't on its own. I don't know if anybody knows anybody that's involved in Chavra Kedisha, but Chavra Kedisha people sometimes are up all night long with these dead people, sitting with them all night long, learning Mishnah, doing whatever, but it's not allowed for that person to be by himself. And also, when you bring the dead man to the kever, it's not just a simple thing where each person is around the kever, surrounding it. There must be a circle around the dead guy. There must be a circle around him. They don't allow the person to be buried without a circle around him. That's why you gotta have 10 men there in order to bury the person. You shouldn't just have one, because we're worried about the Shadim, the Ruchos, the Mazikin that are gonna be around there. You gotta make sure that those people take care of. The Tami Nagam does bring down a story. Now this story I read in other places as well. Very, very similar things. Now we think of witches as being different from vampires, and vampires as being different from werewolves. But you should know, in European folklore, a werewolf is a vampire. And they're all witches. It's the exact same thing. There's no difference between any of the three. Meaning, a witch has the ability to change, to be a shapeshifter, to be able to change shapes and become whatever they want, which is a werewolf. Usually they choose an animal. So usually they turn into bats or cats or anything else that rhymes with the ATS at the very end. I'm joking, but anything else that they want. In Africa, they're always known as wolves. They come into bears. They're allowed to be lions and hyenas. They're all over the place. And it's funny, because in Egypt, they become cats, they become jackals and things that are common among that place. And in China, they're all over the place. They could be pandas, they could be different types of cats, different tigers, whatever, stuff like that. They're all known as different things, but they're all the exact same thing. And the vampire thing of them comes from basically around this type of story. The Talmud Hagen brings down the Sefer HaChassidim. There was a mice of a witch. She wasn't known. This is a bit of a stretch. But regardless, mice of a witch, she died. and they didn't find her body until 3 days later. She was over 100 years old, a very, very old woman. She always kept to herself. She was supposed to have had children, but her children moved away immediately and they were never around. She was 100 years old. She was found on the floor with her mouth wide open, her tongue sticking out, limbs twisted together, and her eyes sort of like popping out from her skin. So they immediately buried her and whatever. A couple days later, she started to appear in people's dreams. She came to people in dreams at night. She would stare at them, look at them, snap her fingers, or do something like that. And within the next day, they would tell people about the dream and they would immediately die. Within a total of 7 days, there were a total of 100 dead people in the town where this woman was buried. And each one of them, or not everyone, but most of the people had the same story. We saw this woman in a dream, you know, after she was already dead. 15 days later, it took them 15 days. For some reason, it did not appear for the next 8 days, but regardless.
You watch the movie and then you die.
Well, this is a little bit different. 15 days later, they looked at it. They decided to unearth the body. They took the body out. This is a little crazy. The witch had the hat inside her mouth. She was buried with her hat that she always had. It wasn't like a pointy black hat. I don't think it was like that. But she had a hat on. That hat was found inside her mouth. She was bleeding outside of her eyes, and she was smiling. So they immediately took her, and they burned her. And they burned her, you know, whatever, and all the dreams completely stopped. Sefer Hasidim is a whole big piece about that and how witches work and werewolves and everything like that. But you should know, these, I don't want to say it's folklore, but there are stories all over. The genies in Africa, with the witches slash werewolves and vampires in Europe, and everything in China is the craziest stories. Those are the absolute craziest, because they're like, they add in the little mummy things also. Everything's all absolutely crazy. That's the idea behind not leaving the Nevela on the 8th all night long. Because if you leave it up on the 8th, somebody's going to take care of it, somebody's going to grab a hold of it, and the Shadim are going to have some type of a power over this woman, and thus, lo tali nivasala 8th. Why? Lo titami asad mascha. We don't want your land to become tame, full of this stuff, full of all this crazy stuff that's going on over here. Very similar in Chaf Beis Hay, it says, lo yakli gever alisha, v'lo yavash gever simlas isha, ki duavas Hashem alakecha kol se'ela. Can't wear woman's clothing, man can't wear woman's clothing, a woman can't wear men's clothing. So very quickly, this is Rav Nassim Adler. It says, kli, Rav Nassim Adler says, kli gever is something different. I don't know if anybody remembers from Parshas Matos, but it says, go kill pa'or, b'nechlehem asher niklu lachem, because of the plots that they plotted against you. Nechlehem is the word kli. So the kli that it's talking about here, lo yeh kli gever alisha, means it has nothing to do with man's clothing on woman. That's not an isser. It has to do with a man's thoughts. A man's plots should not have anything to do with a woman. And by doing so, you should not wear woman's clothing in order to get closer to woman. So the kli has nothing to do with the kalim, you know, kalim is in clothing. Because otherwise it should read, lo yeh simlas gever alisha. That's what it should read. But the Kli is trying to tell you that really it's all talking about the guy. That the guy can't have thoughts about her and he can't wear her clothing. And that's the idea behind it. So that's the Rav Nassim Adler. The Yaros Tavash, Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz, brings down about mirrors. That everything, a very different type of shot in this whole pasuk. It's going on the guy and there's an Isser Gomer from the Torah to be able to look inside a mirror. Now we know, okay, there's tons of things that come up in this pasuk. The Bala Turim says that it refers to Kli Torah, not allowed to teach woman Torah. The Yonas Menuziel says you're not allowed to wear tzitzis and tefillin. Comes out from this pasuk over here. This is from Israel. There's other pshat that says they can't go to war. Other people that say they can't have weapons. Other people that says they can't wear pants. They can't. What? Everybody has their own pshat. And what this pasuk is referring to, the Sefer Hasidim says Kol Isha and Kol Ish are mentioned in this pasuk. That a man can't sing in front of a woman, and a woman can't sing in front of a man. Both of them are brought down from this pasuk. Kol Ish. Ever heard of that?
No.
Okay. Either way, regardless, that's all brought down from this pasuk. The Aros Tavash says it's totally on a different side. It says referring to mirrors, that women are allowed to look in mirrors, but men are not. Why? Okay, there's a Zohar. The Zohar says anything that has a diukon has a shade inside it. Meaning, anybody seen Child's Play with Chucky, that little doll that was killing everybody? So apparently there is something behind that. So it goes like this. It doesn't work the same way, meaning there will never be a little doll that will be able to kill you. I once read All for the Boss. It was the old All for the Boss. And on page, I think, 5 or 6, at the very beginning of the book, it says that she was traumatized one time. Ruchama Shane was traumatized one time. She was a little girl, and she brought a doll home. And her father, Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman, who was a tremendous tzaddik, even though he wasn't considered like a rav or anything, but he was a tremendous tzaddik. He was smashing the head in to get rid of the tzura on the face of that doll, and she's sitting there crying, and only then, it was taken out of the second book. When they reprinted the book, it was taken out. It's a little extreme. I remember the first time I read it, I looked at that book, and I'm like, oh, this is not for me. I put it over to the side. But the fact is, it is a halacha that's brought down by the Zohar. We don't hold of it, and it's not brought down, I guess, in Shulchan Aruch, but that you're not, if you have a doll or something similar, you got to make sure to destroy the tzura. That goes by plastic animals. It goes by almost anything. If you have something that has the tzura of a person, you got to be able to destroy it, preferably on the face, to be able to cut off a little bit of the nose, cut off a little bit of the ear, to make sure that there's nothing there. Says the Yaros Tavash, that halacha applies by photographs, it applies by pictures up on walls, it applies by statues, it applies by anything that a person has that has that. Pictures should not be fully made. There should be something missing. Statues should not be fully made. There should be something missing. And if it's not, there's going to be a shade on it. There's going to be a shade on it, and that shade has power over that part of the house. Now, that's an absolute crazy, crazy thought. That takes it a little bit further. But that's the idea. Not to have those thoughts around, not to have the tumah around you, so that you can keep it outside of your house. Says Yaros Tavash at the very end, by the way. Yonatan Eichert says at the very end, he says that Balvonusinu Arabin, we understood from Germany, we got from Germany all these things. He's writing this in about 1780, maybe 1810, around that time. He said, Balvonusinu Arabin, we learned from Germany to keep them in our house, and we have pictures all over our house of Gedolim. But it's also gummer to have such a thing. Also gummer to have such a thing, unless you're missing a little part inside it. And it's a big machlokes also if it has to be sticking out, or if it's just having it straight. Yonatan Eichert says he was machmer, even if just that. Yeah, meaning don't paint the ear. Like, cover up the ear, cover up a nose, cover up something.
You have to cover part of the face.
Yeah, cover up part of the face. It should be preferably, but also it could work on part of the body also, as long as you can definitely see the rest of part of the body.
Like a corner of a photo.
Yeah. My mother went to school with people who wouldn't, there are a few people that wouldn't be photographed.
Wouldn't be photographed.
Would not be photographed. Does that mean that for
apparently that was something very, very normal before the 20s and the 30s.
The wooden hands and the faces.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I went to one of these rabbis' houses, and all these pictures, they were had like, if you look closely, like a camel was made out of wood. They were painted like a wooden camel, and painted Moshe Rabbeinu was like just a
clear face or something, whatever.
It was all wood. Everything was painted.
I think it was wood. That's interesting. Very, very interesting. There's halachas regarding this. They are brought down, but okay, whatever. That's something different. Kan Sipor. Now, what's up with Kari Kan Sipor Lefanecha? The mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein. I've been zocha to be able to do this mitzvah twice in my life. There are a lot of conditions that need to be done in order for it to be done. You have to be mafker part of your house beforehand, and then the bird has to come, and you got to make sure it's the female, you got to make sure the right eggs and everything. There's a lot of conditions that have to be done for Kan Sipor. Actually, somebody, Ariel Campbell, if anybody knows Ariel Campbell, Ariel Campbell just had the mitzvah in his house. He wasn't able to make a bracha because he wasn't sure about, there were a couple things that weren't clear, but Ariel Campbell just had it in his house. He had pigeons living in his kitchen. So he was able to do the mitzvah, but he couldn't do it because it was still considered part of his house. Regardless, you know, you throw away the mother bird, basically. You pick up the egg, and you take the egg for yourself. And I will tell you that the skula works also. Supposedly, there's a skula within Kan Sipor that if you take the egg and you do Shiloh HaKein, it causes children to be born. So I had a crazy story where a guy told me that on Shabbos. He said there's a skula for, a husband and wife who haven't had children to let them do Shiloh HaKein, and they'll be able to have children. They'll have children very, very soon. So somebody told me that on Shabbos. The next day, on Sunday, I had Shiloh HaKein in my house. Not near my house, I should say right by there. I was about to do it, and I'm like, hey, I know these two people that haven't had kids yet. So I called them up and I said, do you want to come over? So they did. They came over. They came and they did Shiloh HaKein and everything. They made the bracha. They brought it out. And I it was certain pigeon. You have to know all these things, whether it's a female and how you got to throw it away. You got to make sure it's out there. You got to touch it, whatever. There's all these things you got to do if you want to make the bracha. Either way, regardless, he picked it up, did the kinyan, and kept it for himself and brought it down, whatever it was. Not exaggerating when I say 10 months and 1 week later, he had a child. 10 months and 1 week later. It was a very cool. I have no idea if it was because of that or whatever it was, but it definitely, you know, it brought out, you know, that this thing, Shiloh HaKein, is not a simple maisa. So let's try to understand it. I tried explaining to a Nachum person once, Shiloh HaKein didn't work out well. How do you explain Shiloh HaKein being rachamim? You're basically stealing the baby away from the mother. And there's nothing, you can't get around it. And this is supposed to be rachamim? This is supposed to be the mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And yet they say that it's pure rachamim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we have in the burn. What's going on here? You're throwing away, you're taking the mother bird and you're throwing it away. And the fact is, okay, you're not taking the baby in front of its mother. That I understand. But to just randomly go up when I don't need the egg, you find a mother bird with an egg, you're supposed to throw away the mother bird and take that egg and keep it for yourself? Where's the rachamim? Where's the chesed involved in this? So I did find a Panach Raza. The Panach Raza does say that when it says at the end, Varachta Yamim, you have length of days, he means for the bird. The bird will live a long time. That the mother bird will have a longer life because of it. That I found to be an unbelievable Kiddush. That's not brought down in the Gemaras or anything. That's just his own opinion, that Varachta Yamim refers to the bird. I've never seen a Rishon that said that. That's number one. That's an unbelievable answer. So the mother bird will live longer, you take away the baby. But number two, and I think this is an awesome answer, it goes through basically like this. Yalka Ruveni says, it's a Yisorus Lamala. It's Yisorus Lamala. What happens is like this. The bird goes and cries. The bird goes and cries to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Hashem, these Jews, they're taking away my baby bird. Now what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is immediately says to himself, why are they taking away the baby bird? Because I commanded it as a mitzvah. And the Jews, even though they don't understand the concept behind it, even though they don't understand the rachamim behind it, they don't understand the chesed that's behind this, they don't realize what's going on behind the scenes. They're willing to do it anyway. They're willing to go up against PETA, and they're willing to go ahead and do it anyway and take away that baby bird and keep it for themselves, even though they don't understand it. For that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that's an unbelievable thing that should give them an extra schus for Mashiach to come. That should be an unbelievable little schus to be there. Ah, here we go. It's a remez to Gerin. It's a remez to Gerin. Now, how do I say that? As a tzipor lo basar, that's written by Avram Avinu when he had the Bris Bein HaBasarim. He took all the animals and split them in half and put them in each side. They were supposed to represent the galuses. At the very end, he put the birds. That's a tzipor lo basar. He never split up the birds. Those birds are supposed to refer to Gerim, that join Klai Yisrael, that fly on over to Bnei Yisrael and come and join us. Tzipor also refers to a malach, and the malach is supposed to be a higher form, and Gerim are supposed to be higher forms, or whatever it is. Regardless, there's supposed to be Gerim that come to us in Klai Yisrael. That's why our Gerim have names that have to do with birds. Tzipora, for example, is the wife of Moshe Rabbeinu. There's Yisro. Yisro is the Lashon of Tur, of a pigeon that's brought down. Balak ben Tzipor. Balak was the son of Gerim. Tzipor, there's a Medrash that says son of Gerim. Tzipor was his name. Gerim are known as different birds' names throughout Klai Yisrael. You look out, all these Gerim have that sort of a thing, where they're all known as different birds' names. So these refer to Gerim. Now what are we doing? If the mother is overprotective of her children, meaning the mother is the actual Goyim themselves, overprotective of those children are the Gerim of Klal Yisrael, the things that you want to bring back into us, you want to bring back into Bnei Yisrael. Grab them, throw away that mother bird, don't have any rachamim for the Goyish mother that's trying to take care of that baby, and grab that baby, grab those Afrochim and the Beitzim, take them for yourselves and say, these Gerim are ours. Don't say to yourself, oh, but what's that mother going to think? I don't want to have to explain to them that this person became a Gerim, now she has no Sheikhus to the mother anymore. I don't want to have to do that to them. No, grab them anyway. Grab them and bring them into Klal Yisrael to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they're for them. Now, forget about the actual bird itself. That's something I don't think anybody's able to understand. It's straight up for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't think it's even worth going into why it would be rachamim for the bird to take away its baby. It's supposed to be a remez lamala. That just like we take away the baby and we throw away that mother bird, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should take in our gerim and throw away the mother bird. The mother bird who's really evil. Not allowing her child to do what's really right for that child. That mother bird you should throw away. And that means the times of Mashiach, where the people are ready to come into Klal Yisrael, who are supposed to be Jews, who are supposed to come into us, those people should come. Those people are not ready to come to Klal Yisrael, those people who should not become Jews, who don't have that ability to be able to become Jews for whatever reason, because of their sins or for whatever they've done, throw them out. That's supposed to be the remez, and it's supposed to be a remez to what we're going to have lost at level. That's the idea behind Kan Tzipor. Now, and there's another Rav Wolfson that's brought out over here. We only have a little bit of time. All right, I'm skipping for now. Skip that also. The Gra was once asked, where was he in the Torah? Where is he mentioned in the Torah? Like, where is he brought down in the Torah? So he said like this. It's an unbelievable little thing. Bereshis, Sefer Bereshis, stands for the first 2,000 years of creation. Shmos is the year 2,000 to 3,000. Vayikra, 3,000 to 4,000. Bamidbar, 4,000 to 5,000. And Devarim is 5,000 to 6,000. Now we know we're in the year 5,000 right now. Each Parsha in Devarim counts as 100 years. But there are 11 Parshias. There's Devarim, Vaschanan, Ekev, Re'e, Shoftim, Kisetze, Kisavo, Nitzavim, Vayelech go together, Hazinu, and Zosavracha. And each one is like that. It happens to be 12, 11, 10, 10, 11, 12. 10, 10, 11, I'm sorry. 12, 11, 10, 10, 11. Those are the Parshias of the Torah. So most of them do have around 10 Parshias to be able to stand for those 100 years. I don't know how Shmos and Bereshis work. I have absolutely no idea. But the Gra says those 11 Parshios are really 10, because in some Vayelech are together, they're the 10 Parshios that stand for 100 years each. That means that the year 5,500 to 5,600, 5,500 to 5,600, is Parshas Kisetze. So the Gra says he lived toward the end of the 5,500s. He lived right before, let's say, 1820, 1830. He was probably asked the question around 1830. He was born sometime around the end of the 5,500s, which means he's at the very end of Parshas Kisetze. Says the Gra, I'm in this pasuk. My name is Moyelocha Bechischa Evan Be'Evan Gedolo Ktana. You're not allowed to have different stones. Moyelocha Bebeischa Eifa Be'Eifa Gedolo Ktana. You can't have different weights in your house. Evan Shlema Batzedek Yeloch. A stone that is full and righteous. That's what you should have in your house. Eifa Shlema Batzedek Yeloch. A full Eifa and a beautiful Eifa is what you should have in your house. Laman Yarichu Yamecha that you lengthen your days in the land that Hashem gave you. Says the Gra, my name is Eliyahu ben Shlomo. Evan Shlema is Aleph, is Eliyahu. Ben, Beis Nun. Shlema is Shlomo. There's no Yud in the thing. It's Eliyahu ben Shlomo. I'm right there. And he said, they said to him afterward, you know what the words after is? Evan Shlema, Vatzedek Yalach. You're going to be righteous. He's going to be a tzaddik. You're going to be right in everything you do. And the Gra says, like that. We're not going to talk about that right now. And at the end of the pasuk, that you lengthen your days, that you have Torah, and you have the arichus yamim of the Torah. Now, I always wondered, great, unbelievable pshat, absolutely unbelievable pshat. What's the Eifa Shlema Betzedek Yalach? What's the Eifa Shlema stand for? What's that Eifa Shlema? So I always thought like this. We know the Gra got into a massive fight with the Hasidim in his days. But we know that the Hasidim weren't necessarily wrong. The Gra is right to fight them so that they didn't become an offset, like Shabbosai Tzvi or something like that. But still, what was the Gra went crazy on them? But they were right. The Hasidim are tremendous people nowadays. So why in the world are they not mentioned anywhere? Eifa Shlema is the gematria, as the same gematria as Zeb Baal Shem Tov. Is that Baal Shem Tov? You know the famous machlokes between the Gra and the Baal Shem Tov. Again, Eifa Shlema is Zeb Baal Shem Tov, but Tzedek Yalach. He was also right. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. The Misnagdim and the Hasidim were 100% right in whatever they were doing at their time. They both needed to be there. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't agree with the Hasidim, he didn't agree with the Misnagdim. It was Tzedek Yalach. Both of them are right in their own special ways. So both of them are right. That's a good thing to say over to Hasidim when you're a Misnagdim and you're at their table, whatever. That's a very good thing to be able to say to them. But that's the idea, that Eifa Shlema refers to the Baal Shem Tov, and Evan Shlem refers to Eliyahu ben Shlomo the Gra. That's how it ends up going down. Now the last thing we're going to say is Amalek. Zachoris asher asu lecha Amalek bederbis yitzchamim yitzchamim. Now we know there is a mitzvah of Timcha as Zechor Amalek. If anybody missed it all the way before when we did Parsha Zachor before Purim, if anybody missed that Parsha, they can hear it in this week's Parsha. And if you're a good Baal Kore, if you have a good Baal Kore, he'll do it twice. He'll do it Timcha as Zechor Amalek mitachas shemayim lo tishkoch, Timcha as Zecher Amalek mitachas shemayim lo tishkoch. He'll do it twice just in case anybody wasn't Yotze the first time. And I think in Armenian I did it. So I'm going to announce that we should do it again just in case I wasn't Yotze everybody, just in case. Regardless, the Zechor Amalek and Zechor Amalek is all brought out there. It really is in this parsha. Now the question is, what is the deal with erasing Amalek? How can you erase Amalek? What are you supposed to do, kill them? We can't kill them nowadays. What are you supposed to forget about them, say they don't exist? But they can't not exist. They're in the Torah. They're written inside the Torah. The Torah is Nitzchi. Every time you forget about them, like let's say you try really hard in 1 year, you're just like, that's it. I'm not going to remember about Amalek ever again. and you take it outside of your head. The next year, you're going to come up to her and be like, oh, you just messed up again. What in the world is the mitzvah of erasing a malach if they're always going to be around because they're always in the Torah? Are you supposed to erase it out of the Torah? But you can't. You're not allowed to. So what's the idea behind erasing a malach and getting rid of them? Now, I know the Gra says it's Germany. Gra said it was Germany way before Germany became, you know, the Nazis and everything. Reb Chaim says it refers, Reb Chaim Brisker said it refers to all anti-Semites. I understand that. But that doesn't mean we can still kill them. The pshat is, I don't know where I got this from. I found it in a notebook, in my notebook. I have absolutely no idea where I wrote it down for from or where it came from, but it's probably the best pshat I've ever seen in a malik. The pshat is, you're not supposed to erase them. You erase their pshat. Erase what they stand for. A malik stands for using bechira, using free will to be free. To do whatever you want. To not agree to anything. To not have any hakaras hatov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To not agree that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did anything for me. To not allow, to not be mishubit to anybody. To say, I can do what I want, and I'll do whatever I want. That's what a malik is all about. To allow themselves to not believe in God, and not only to not believe in God, to irrationally throw out God and say, God is stupid. God is stupid. It makes no sense to believe in God. That type of a pshat is what we have to erase. The idea behind it is to become well-versed in what they know, to be able to answer up all the problems that those philosophers have. To be able to say to them, you're telling me that God doesn't exist? That's ridiculous because of this and that and this and that and etc. Be going up to them and saying that, that is erasing their pshat. That's the idea behind it. Hashem hates them, despises them, and wants to destroy them because he hates the fact that he gave them Bechira and they're using it to destroy him, to go up against him. For that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I can't allow that to happen. I can't allow them to fool people anymore. I can't allow that to be around. You can't let those sfeikos get to you. Don't let those suffiks get among you. And suffik is the same gematria as a malik, we know. Suffik is the exact same. Don't let those doubts get into your head. Improve on your emunah. Be able to answer them and thus wipe out their pshat. That's how you wipe them out. It has nothing to do with the people now. It has to do with what they stand for. Wipe them out. Be like Rav Avigdor Miller. Be able to tell them, do you know what goes into an eye? And go through all the different things, all the different pixels and everything that goes into your eye. Be able to answer them up and say to them, there's tremendous things in this world and you think everything is random? You think everything is just random, just happened all of a sudden? How could you possibly think that way? To become an expert in that stuff, to be able to go up to atheists and mamish teach them how to believe. That's the pshat in Timcha Zechar HaMalek. And if you do that, if you're able to convince somebody who didn't believe in God before to believe in God, forget about whether he's Jewish or not, forget about whether making him a Jew or not, just to make him believe in God, that's Timcha Zechar HaMalek. That's the idea behind erasing the remembrance of HaMalek. It doesn't have to do with the people anymore. The people are gone. Sancheriv destroyed them. The people are gone. We have no person that's known as HaMalek anymore. It's the idea that's still there. The Zechar of HaMalek is still around. The remembrance of what HaMalek stood for in doubting God, that's still here, and that you have to erase.
So what's
that you have to erase? Don't forget, lo tishkach, what they ever did to you. Don't forget what they did to you over there. And by the way, that war that we mentioned all the way above with Amalek and raising the hands and everything, it was an Amunah fight, according to one of the Rishonim. That it was an actual fight of where Amalek was trying to put Sveikos into Klal Yisrael. You guys think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really did that to you? Oh yeah, how do you know it wasn't an hallucination? How do you know it wasn't just a lot of drugs that Moshe Rabbeinu gave you? How do you know that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't just fooling you with a lot of crazy, crazy special graphics and effects and everything like that? How do you know that's not what happened? How do you know? Those sfeikos are what Amalek brought in and Bnei Yisrael to fight them by saying, no, absolutely not.
So we're supposed to wipe out the sfeikot but not forget what the sfeikot can do to us.
Yes. Very good call. A very good call. Not forget what it can cause us to do. All right, guys. Have a good Shabbos.